Well, guys, look, I'm joined today by Podcast Dave and myself. Look, man, Big John's got some. He's held up a little bit, and he's also getting prepared for the PFL to do his thing over there. But look, there's some media and some press that happened with the UFC 300 this week. And so Podcast Dave and I decided to jump on real quick and give you guys some extra content like we had talked about. We wanted to kind of sum it all up into one, but there's some big highlights that came out of it. Obviously, the number one thing is what, Podcast Dave?
It's that 300K bonus.
300K? Some of these dudes never even smelled that much money in their life. They've never been around that much money. They've never seen that much money, man. They don't even know what that much money looks like. And there's an opportunity and a chance for them to get it. That's going to be great.
The question is, Dana's like notorious for like these big pay-per-view shows where he will give out like multiple performances of the night, multiple fight of the night, based on like just really good performances. Mm-hmm. Do you think he gets more stingy on the biggest show ever, given the fact that they're more money?
Oh, you mean like as in more people that get them?
So he's done it in the past where he's given performance of the night to multiple people, and other awards as well. I think like he's like made some up sometimes, or maybe he's just given like multiple fight of the night. But does he only do one each this time since he's...
Well, just to clarify, look, it's been known for a long time, even before my second stint in the UFC, that they would give backroom bonuses, basically is what it was called. Like when you arrive in the back room, you'd have a $25,000 bonus or $50,000 bonus that was written in a check to you if you had a great fight. They'd set it up for you. They'd have them print the check out. Sometimes it was 10 grand. Sometimes it was 25, and sometimes it was 50. And then sometimes you didn't get it that night. So you kind of went home bummed, but then the check came in the mail later that week. So it's common that they give you backroom bonuses or they give you bonuses later on throughout the week. Sometimes you get home and you'd have a check and an iPad. You know, it just depended on what it was. They'd send you something. And so this is common. I don't know what he will do, though, given that this is a $300,000 bonus. Will they still issue the three bonuses or four bonuses that they normally do for fight of the night, performance of the night, all the other stuff? I don't know. Are they going to do it for that? And then also, will they continue doing the other bonuses? That's a good question. But I think what this has done, this is a huge deal. I don't want to downplay it. I've already seen some media going, look, it's a drop in the bucket for what they're, you know, for what the UFC makes and this and that. I do agree with that, but can we just be excited for the moment? Like, can we just be excited for the fact that, look, $300,000 bonus. Some of these guys are only making 50 and 50. Some of them are making a lot of them are former champions. So some of them are making 100 and 100, you know, another 300,000. I mean, that's a lot of damn money, man. That's a lot of damn money for these guys and these females. So I think this is a huge deal. It's a big bonus. It's a good opportunity for us to get the best out of these fighters too. If you go out and put on a show, you're going to get the best out of those fighters and the opportunity to win $300,000. Let me go back to the old days of Pride. Pride said in their contract, if you fight hard, we want to see the pride in you and your fighting. Like, you know, it was that Bushido that we want to see you dig deep and fight your butt off and we will always have you back. It said that in the contract. That's pretty rare to get something like that in a contract from an organization. So this right here is that it's that added bonus. Like, look, if you're going to give me $300,000, I'm going to fight no matter what. Now, look, some of them may come up short, but let's be honest. This fight card, no one's getting cut. These are a lot of them are former champions. A lot of them have been through the ringer. A lot of them have earned their dues to be put on this card. That's why I said originally from this fight card, it is the best fight card in UFC history. It is stacked from top to bottom. Cody Garbrandt and Deiveson Figueiredo, two former champions, are opening the card. Fight number one. So neither one of these guys is getting cut if they lose. So why not go out there and fight your ass off and have an opportunity for that bonus at $300,000? It just makes sense. You know, all of them. All of them, they will go out there and lay it on the line. We, I think, are going to see and be privy to some of the best fights, I think, ever. Now, they may not be the most technical. They may end up being sloppy fights because they're trying so hard, because they're digging so deep, because they're laying it all on the line. And that's okay, because the best fights that we've ever seen, they have not been the most technical fights. Look at the Yuri fight with Glover Teixeira. That fight was not the best fight I've ever seen, but it was one of the most exciting fights I've ever seen. Because there was some sloppiness as they got tired. They gave so much that the technique went out the window and they were exhausted and they fought their asses off. And that's what made that fight so spectacular. There's those kind of fights. I go back, and obviously I throw myself in there a lot because these are my personal experiences. But my second fight with Gilbert Melendez, I lost that fight. But to me, and then when you go back and you talk to Coker, you talk to even Luke Thomas did a special on it talking about how that fight was his favorite fight because I just threw caution in the wind. Gilbert was coming off of the loss, you know, to me or the win, but then the loss, the last time we fought, he had lost to me. It was that feeling of he was composed, but letting it all out. And me, I was fighting careless. Like I was because I was the world champ and just wanted to, just to put on a great show. And it ended up being one of the best fights in history for MMA. So it just, I think we're going to end up seeing that tomorrow night. And I think that's what we're going to get, man. We're going to get this opportunity to see what these fighters really will do, you know, at $300,000 plus their normal pay. Come on, man. I can't we just be happy and excited for that? Because I saw some media going, I'm done talking about, you know, fighter pay. Like people are all getting excited about this, but it's a drop in the bucket for the UFC. They should be doing this every single time. Look, let's just be happy for the fighters for this moment. Let's, you know, you want to complain about it? Let's complain about it next week when all the dust has settled. Let's be excited about what the fighters are having an opportunity to fight for. And I think we're going to end up getting one of the best fight cards, if not the best fight card we've ever seen. I'm excited for it. Pumped.
Cool. And then, so one of the other notable things that I thought was an interesting takeaway from the press conference was Dana was asked about the BMF title. Is it kind of exclusive to guys? Do we get a girl, a female one? And he said that he doesn't see it as a guy-girl title.
Hell no, it shouldn't be considered a guy-girl title. Hell no.
So I mean, with that, you know, that definitely like raises speculation. Who would you put in a female, you know, BMF title match?
Ooh, I mean, Juliana Pena was probably got to be in there after her performance against Amanda Nunes and the way that she fights, the aggressiveness, you know, her stand up is not the greatest, but she's not afraid to take a shot, deliver a shot. She's a dog. I mean, I'd put her probably at the top of the list. And when I say she's a dog, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way towards a female. I simply am saying that she is someone that will bite down on her mouthpiece and just throw caution to the wind and let the fight happen. Obviously somewhere in there, I'd have to probably bring back Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I mean, her and Wei Li, the two of them, when they had their fight, probably are. I mean, I wouldn't even say it's arguable. I think that's been the best fight I've ever seen in female history, in female MMA history. Actually, what am I talking about? That's probably the only female MMA fight I've ever really like. Even from boxing, I've watched all MMA, female MMA. So I would have to say it was probably the best female fight I've ever seen, hands down. I've seen some great fights, some good upsets. I've seen some knockdown dragouts, but that was a very competitive fight. And if you go back and watch that Wei Li and Joanna fight, that fight should have been for a BMF and also to a world title. So those two, that title, that matchup, I mean, if Joanna wanted to come back, I would say it'd have to be probably to see if we could have her and Wei Li fight again, because I'd love to see that fight go on again. I'm trying to think of other fighters that are out there in the female division that right now that would make it happen. I could go back into some of the old school fights, you know, but I mean, like Misha being part of it, obviously. I mean, she, the way that she has fought throughout her career. I mean, the Ronda Rousey fight, literally dislocated her arm. I think a slight fracture in it as well. Didn't tap, still didn't tap even after the arm. She's another person that she went the full limit, man. She didn't want to lose. And that's someone that I look at too. You got Amanda Nunes is in there as well. I mean, Chris Cyborg, there's fighters, but I don't know who you would really put because Joanna's gone. You're not going to get that same fight, but it should have been maybe the Wei Li and Joanna fight could have been for the BMF. But at the time, we didn't know what we had.
I mean, you got to think that with the nickname Thug, Rose Namajunas has to be in there, right?
Yeah, you would think. I mean, look, I love Rose, and I'm big fan, man. I think she's finding her stride right now. I think she got a little lost after the loss to Carla Esparza. She's finding her stride now at 135 or 125. I prefer her to be at 115. I feel like she could go back to being the world champ at any moment, anytime. She's got two wins over Wei Li in that division. I see no reason. I think she also is looking at, I want to kind of create history for myself, be a two division champion. That's one thing. And two is she's probably tired of cutting the weight. it's probably messing with her, you know, her female hormones and her body and mentally. And it's a lot for females to drop 10 pounds. It's not anywhere near the same as a male dropping 10 pounds. And so for them to have to go through that, it makes a difference. And I think mentally it starts to make a difference and wear on them a little bit differently than it does for the men. I would say Rose could be in that mix, but I want to see where she plays out in the 125 pound division. Because if I was to say, yeah, put her down at 115, absolutely, I'd put her in the mix, but she's not there anymore. And it doesn't seem like she's going back down. She has made it pretty clear. She wants to stay at 125. She wants to challenge herself. She wants to be a two division champion. Let her rest there, you know. And then in that Thug Rose talk, let's see how she starts to settle into that position. And then I think we can start talking about her fighting someone there at that division.
And then on the BMF thing, Max and Justin both called for Mark Coleman to wrap the belt around them, and Dana caved and said, done deal.
What do you mean caved? I mean, I think it's a privilege, man. I think it'd be a privilege for him to be there in person and to wrap the belt after what he just did and him being one of the icons of this sport. I mean, let's remember, they took headbutts out of the sport because of Mark Coleman. He has had an impact on this sport from the early days to even right now. Still, the way he has come out of his career, he had made it very clear he was addicted to alcohol, partying, all of these things. He's been sober now for years. Look, this is a big deal. Saving his mother and father from a burning house as of recently, was in a coma, was basically like, these are things that you want to have heroes like that and put them on a pedestal. All we do is bring people down, it seems like lately, not just in the MMA world, but across the world on the news platforms. I think this is a big thing to be celebrated. And I'm actually a huge fan of Mark Coleman. I've hung out with him, spent time at the nightclubs with him, spent time on the dance floor with him, whipping around his sweaty shirts and spraying people in the face with his sweat. But look, we've had great times. I actually reached out to him and congratulated him on getting the nod and then bringing him out to the UFC 300. It hadn't been confirmed that he was going to be able to wrap the belts around until about yesterday, I believe.
Yeah. So
good for him, man. I'm happy for him. I'm sad that his dog is gone. You know, but his dog saved his life as well as his mother and father's. Man, the dog literally went out on his shield. That's fucking pretty damn impressive. So, I mean, I look at it as this is a huge opportunity. This is special. This is special. And I'm glad that Dana White stepped up and did this.
And so with that said, I found it interesting that both these things seemed to occur at the press conference yesterday, where Max and Justin were yelling for the 300K bonuses when someone asked a question about it. Dana said, all right, done deal. Like, kind of just caved that moment. Clearly had been thinking about something anyway, because, you know, it's been talked about for a week now, so I'm sure it's been in his ear. And then, of course, the Mark Coleman thing, said, done deal. I think that one was a little bit easier to say done deal on. But they both happened at press conference, and it was when people were asking them, people brought them up, like media brought them up, fighters kind of in the background were shouting about it, mostly Max and Justin, and Dana did them. Is that a sign of, like, when fighters are kind of reasonable in their request, that, like, you think Dana is kind of open to some of these things if fighters are, like, you know, I think Max and Justin, right, are going to go in there and have a banger of a fight. So maybe Dana's like, give these guys a reason to go out there and really make 300 memorable, right? I think that's one of it. But do you think he's going to be more open to reasonable requests like this that do push the boundaries a little bit versus, like, just when people come in and cry about fighter pay and Dana's like, probably, like, you know, doesn't want anything to do with it.
Dana's numb to the fighter pay argument. He's extremely numb to it. Now, especially with the settlement of the class action lawsuit of $355 million, he's just completely numb to it. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. It's worked for us. It seems like it's working for the fighters. Sure, people are going to say that it's not working for the fighters. They deserve more. They do deserve more. And I have continued to say this. I'm going to go back on this. That until there's a fighter union where they all want to join together and do something, nothing will ever change. What they can do is continue to try to step up the game like they're doing right now. It's saying, hey, $300,000 bonuses. Let's make these $50,000 bonuses go away and let's start making them 75 to 100 every time. We fight our asses off. We give you everything that we put out there. I think you're going to see the fighters' performances start to increase if you start saying 100,000. 50,000 5 years ago was a lot of money. I'm sorry, but in this economy, $50,000 is not a lot of money anymore. And so you also got to take into consideration inflation and what's going on. So not to get too political, but I'm simply just saying as years go by, money is not worth what it used to be, and we need to start upping the ante a little bit. And the UFC does make money, so it's a good opportunity for them to do that.
Beyond just that, I mean, things like calling for a card in your city because you think, you know, because you're starting to come, you're starting to have a rise, calling for you know, these customized entrances that MVP wanted. Mm-hmm. Do you, like, Dana typically says, like, doesn't entertain them, not necessarily says no, but doesn't, like, totally entertain them. But he's, like, seems like he's kind of more open to, so long as, like, the delivery happens from the fighter side, more open to kind of some of these requests, right? Like, you know, fighters are, like, you know, fighter from a state they don't typically go to is on the rise.
Yeah, let's go with Joaquin Buckley. Okay, mm-hmm. Joaquin Buckley just came out and asked Dana, like, hey, you know, Derek Lewis doesn't want to fight five rounds. And let's be honest, Derek Lewis does not want to fight five rounds. He probably has never, except unless it was for a title. Let's, like, heavyweights don't want to fight five rounds. And then when they do, they're like, oh, I hope this doesn't go past a certain amount. They're always worried and concerned about conserving their energy. Why not throw Joaquin Buckley in there? He's from that area. Let's give this opportunity to him and go ahead and be the main event. Give him a good dance partner. Give him someone there that he can really get down with. That makes for a very fun fight, man. I mean, him and Kelvin Gastelum would be a great fight. Kelvin's down at 170. Joaquin Buckley's down at 170. Let's see what happens. Let's let the cream rise to the top. I think that would be a fantastic fight. Look, I very rarely have seen Kelvin Gastelum in a shitty fight. Let's go ahead and make him have him fight Joaquin Buckley. That'd be a fantastic fight. There was some other stuff that you were, what did you say there a second ago?
So I was just kind of like, it was more just in that vein of like making these requests, right? Like Buckley, you remember that Buckley one. So like he's asking like, hey, put me in the main event. Mm-hmm. Like these are requests again, like fighters are going to make these requests. So long as they're not crying about it, right? And they're trying to build hype around things. Do we kind of see more of this, do you think? Like, does Dana seem to be kind of opening up more to fighter input like this? So long as it's not crying about fighter pay or crying. You know, like, you're not going to, someone's not going to come off a four. I don't want to name names because I think that's, you don't want to name fighters. But someone's coming off a four fight losing streak and then they're like, hey, for my next entrance, can I have like a, can I have this special walkout, right? Like, you're gonna be well, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, okay, it kind of, I understand what you're saying, it doesn't make any sense, but let's kind of get into this a little bit deeper than just the on the surface. Right now, with the partnership with the WWE and the UFC, in terms of them being basically the same company, under the same company, let's talk about right now the UFC is lacking what? Stars. They're lacking star power. I just had Bobby Lashley in here the other day, and him and I were talking about how Roman Reigns, you know, is basically a star. He didn't really become a star, apparently, and I'm not a big fan of this. Maybe you could talk to me more about this, until he kind of became the heel. Is that proper?
Yeah.
He was a good guy in the beginning, I guess, when they brought him in, and then he started kind of turning heel a little bit, and then people gravitated and attached to him. Am I correct?
Well, I think it was more they put real character development behind him as a heel, and so fans, it's like the Floyd Mayweather effect. Fans love to hate him, but before he was a heel, he was a fan favorite, and he was basically being shoved down our throats. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, fans tend to hate when you shove it down our throats, and we don't necessarily want it and agree with it.
And so that's kind of where we're at right now with the UFC. The UFC is looking for their next Conor McGregor, and they haven't found him yet. And so what can we do to maybe bring that in? The fans are going to attach to you somehow, some way. Let's be honest. I'll go back to Josh Koscheck. Josh Koscheck was, he started off as a heel. And people hated him. They wanted to see him lose. And he thrived off of it. And the UFC ran with that. Mm-hmm. And then he got all the way up to the title, fought George St. Pierre, you know, ended up with the loss there. But still, they were able to build that. And it was a big gate when he fought Josh Koscheck. And so, like, when I'm talking about, they need to start building stars again. If that means adding a walkout here or there for somebody that they just brought in, like MVP, you know, or a champion like an Izzy, where he does the breakdancing walkout. I can't remember the Japanese fighter's name. He always used to come out kind of either dressed like a girl and do a dance, you know, with a group behind him. Mm-hmm. You know, Genki Sudo had done like great break dances and walkouts with dancing. When he came out, there was always a spectacle, and that's how you kind of build stars. And I think right now the UFC is lacking stars, And it would make sense for them to start allowing these fighters to make requests. Now, let's not go over the top. Let's not start having pyros, and let's not make it a WWE format. But if you can do something in the walkout in the hallway, and all I have to do is play a certain amount of or a certain type of music, let's do it. Let's make it happen. And that's easy enough. Like, you know, MVPs and Izzy's, there was nothing different about it. He was just allowed to walk out with two buddies behind him that could dance, you know, and MVP was able to wear whatever getup he wanted to wear. I mean, in my UFC, I want to say it was UFC 49, I walked out with a mask on, like a Nacho Libre mask on, you know, and it was right after 9/11. So I had the American flag wrapped around my head as well. It was just, there's little things that you can do to help, to try and help build character. And, yeah, I think that's really where this is all headed. Fighters need to make reasonable requests, and I think the UFC will start to allow it because they're looking for that star power. They're looking like, hey, what are these fans gravitating to? Who are they gravitating to? And if that little bit can make it happen, let's do it. I'm going to go back to the Strikeforce days. We had a Strikeforce Challenger series, and I thought it was really cheesy at the time, but then they did features on guys like Luke Rockhold, him with his surfboard out surfing, and they showed clips of him. It was a short little, you know, a piece, 1 minute or 2 minute long piece they did on Luke before every one of his fights. It showed him surfing, it showed him skating, and then people started gravitating him, all the skateboarders, all the surfers, like, oh, and his brother was a pro surfer. It was ways to attach themselves to him. You know, oh, he trains jiu-jitsu at this location. Now he's in Santa Cruz. Now I know where to find him. He's always out surfing, or he's at that skate park. Maybe I'll run into him. That's what they, that's how you start to build character. That's how you start to build your star power. And so I think the UFC is looking to start to do something like that. Like I said, they're not going to go overboard though. That's not Dana.
And then the last thing we can wrap up on from the press conference was just a personal observation for me and going to get your take on it. Maybe a little controversial, so you can totally shoot it down if you want. But when I was watching the presser, you know, it's in the US, it's in Vegas, right? You definitely have the American audience watching, right? But you have a ton of international stars up there, or international fighters. Does it kill the momentum when you have two guys, you know, trying to put on a big time fight? The press conference is kind of there to build that, but you have this total gap of like language barrier where international fighters are coming in. But then I look at like Wei Li, for example. Wei Li's learning English, so she's able to have a little bit of banter there, right? But then there's just fighters that do not speak a lick of English fighting American fighters. And they're up there trying to build a fight, and I just feel like that the interpreter, that pause in there just kills the momentum to where you can't have that kind of shouting exchange sometimes, and it just definitely like kills the momentum for me. I just want to get your take. Should non-American fighters be that don't speak English be trying to learn English so that they can build fights when it comes to like these big US shows, or is there something that should the UFC adopt some sort of better technology that enables for better translation, quicker translation, that the fighters can have in their ear or something, kind of like you have at these political events? Mm-hmm. Or do you just think it's not a big deal at all?
I do think it is a big deal. First, let's start off with your first question is, I do think all the fighters that are fighting from other countries, whether it be from Dagestan, Russia, Brazil, they all, Japan, doesn't matter, China, they all need to learn to speak English, because no matter where they go, the interviews will normally be in that language. Now, I'm not trying to say that everyone in the world needs to speak English. I'm saying, but if you want to be marketable in the United States, which we are the biggest consumer of pay-per-views, there, the UK, Canada, Japan, and Australia, four of those five, those are the one, I think it's four of the five, they all speak English. So if we want to be marketable, if you want to be marketable and you want to have your marketability and your star power go up, you should learn to speak English. Now, I want to also remind people that what made Habib, what made Joanna and Wei Li got into like a little thing at the presser, what made them so popular, or what's making them popular, is it doesn't have to be great English. It has to be English that you understand and you say something right back. And that's it. Like I'll go with Habib. Habib's English was pretty good at the time, but send me location. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know. And then when Joanna was talking trash to Wei Li, and Wei Li said, "Shut up." That's all she said. And the crowd went nuts. People went crazy. Yeah. It just has to be something small. We don't need long, drawn out dialogue. We just need to see that, hey, look, they're trying, that they understand. That brings so much star power with it, because mm-hmm. you go to other countries, like if I go to China, right? And I tried learning how to speak Chinese a little bit when I was there for the 6 months, 3 months at a time. But the people that were working on set of the movie set with me, they were huge fans of the fact that I was trying. When I went to dinners, then I would try to say something in Chinese. They loved it. They loved it. Like we as Americans, we could sometimes get annoyed with it. Like, oh, like I can't understand you, this and that. But no. We got to be a lot more supportive of the fact that they're trying and be appreciative of the fact that they're trying. I think I'm going to smash your boy. I'm going to smash him. That's all he says, right? Like there's not a lot that needs to be said. Now, on the technological side, as I do think there is a technology that we can use where you put the earpiece in their ear and let them hear what they have to say in live so they can answer right away to their interpreter. And then their interpreter could translate it back. Or as they're talking trash back, the interpreter could be saying it. The only problem that I think you're going to have with that is that you have a very soft-spoken sometimes interpreter who doesn't know how to translate that type of energy. And so that could also be another hiccup there. But I like the automatic in the ear interpretation of what they're saying. And so then there's no drag on of like, okay, it goes to the interpreter goes to the person, and then the fighter gives it back to the interpreter says it back to, that takes that momentum swing. It takes it out. I like that idea.
And then like maybe even they have the big screen up behind them, right, with the presser, like maybe even like real-time closed captions as well, where it's showing you like for us, right, for the media and for us to follow along and make sure that, because I
you
think
just call
that, again,
us
like,
media,
well, for media and us, I mean fans, I mean gotcha, fans, us, gotcha, media and fans, so us at home is what I mean, us at home watching on YouTube, and then the media in attendance at the event, that's what I meant.
That sounds like a good idea as well. Yeah, it could be something on the closed caption, and then they can or you can have it in closed caption in some sort of whatever the language is they need to see interpreted, so then the fighter can read it and be able to translate it as they're saying.
Or the fighter reading it as well. Yeah, for the fighter able to read. But if you're saying that the fighter has an earpiece, then they're getting the audio
that way as well. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought, because I was watching, I was like, man, I was like, killing the momentum is dying for me right now, because I want to know what they're saying in real time, and like I want Hill to be able to respond to Alex. Like right there on the spot, like not have to wait. Like I feel like it kills, like, you know, just things like that where I think it helps the energy in the room.
It does. And look, we went through this a little bit with Fedor Emelianenko. He speaks English. He understands English. And you know how we know this is because when we talk to him and as we're asking questions to him in the fighter interviews, he laughs and smirks when we say things that we know that he understands. And then he answers right away. And then we know he can speak. And I've been in groups of conversations with him and other people, and he speaks English just fine. So they also don't want to lose where they come from. They also want their Russian fans to understand that, you know, that they are still Russian or they're still Brazilian, or, you know, a lot of fighters want to keep that their heritage or whatever it is to them. They want to make sure that people understand that where they're from. So they try to go with that. I understand. I get it. I think I think learning how to speak English is important, and it doesn't have to be, you know, sit down and let's have a full huge conversation. Just the words that you are, the things that you start to understand what the fighter is saying to you. So then you can rebuttal right back in small English, you know?
Totally.
All right. Well, hey guys, I think that's going to wrap. Is that going to wrap us up? That's going to wrap us up right now. But look, this is something we decided to jump on and give you guys a little extra content. You know, normally I would do this. It was called Punk's Opinion before. But you know what? Dave and I think you're going to start playing around a little bit more, giving you guys some moments when John can't join us, trying to jump on, or when I can't join, maybe him and John will jump on and do something to talk about a topic. We like this format. I like the way that this is working out. You give you guys an extra 10 minutes at any moment or 20 minutes or whatever it is of some good feedback. You know what, though, Dave? There is one more thing. You know what? We're going to just see if we can do something else. But look, I want to say this. I want to say thank you guys so much for tuning in. And I'm excited about UFC 300. Also, the PFL is today. So if you guys are tuning this or watching this, go ahead and tune in for the PFL as well.